Is it running?
It is working now.
Okay, great.
Okay. Oh, that's great joy. Alright.
Aren't they suing him?
I think they probably ought to, but they, well, they've only just started realizing that treating this as a legal issue is probably right in the head. So they're not really the circuit that are up for understanding the intricacies of the committee, I guess. I mean, you would have thought they could, but it's actually quite hard work. The law isn't very clear.
Can't they get legal aid?
That's a good question. They might be able to. It's just, it's a strapped now. You know, like, the Citizens Advice Bureau is so hard to actually get access to because they have so many cases and so few people. So, but yeah, that's probably the next thing they'll have to do.
Alright.
Yep, everything's okay.
Everything's going. I can see the computer and my laptop.
Are we supposed to count to 10 or something?
No,
everything's... You're gonna have to do all that.
Yeah, it's recording already. Everything you're saying now is gonna go down the screen with posterity. Yeah, so just, I'm gonna be watching the recording on my computer. Hopefully, if there's a drop off, it won't be a problem. We can just restart it again. I hope there won't be. But in any case, we probably won't be bothered by anything, so just... Pretend it's a normal meeting.
Okay, yeah.
And just kind of let me know.
Okay, thanks.
Right, well, I thought the right thing to do was to review what Weiqing's been doing in the area of dialogue structure for Package 1 over the last period. So basically for him to talk about what progress he's been making. And then for us to, for him to describe what work he intends over the next period of the project. And for us to figure out what help he needs with that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe give him some help figuring out what publications he's gonna get out of this, and for us to make sure that it fits into the overall project. So this is something that, you know, we're not gonna do everything today, but I wanted to make sure that we sort of all aligned on what he was doing at the moment, and then sort of figured out how to give him the best advice coming up. So,
okay.
So that's why I called this.
Okay, thanks.
You're going to give a presentation for us then?
Yeah, very quick slides. So I've been here for 14 months, I think. Yeah, so I've accustomed to the environment here and enjoyed staying here. So from last year, I was supervising the annotation of segmentation and summarization with Jin of the ICSIC office. And on the other hand, I did some very preliminary work on chunking the switchboard corpus, but that was not well picked up in the MA corpus, which is supposed to be. So, and currently I'm more interested in the in analyzing the discourse structure in multi-party meetings. This is what I'm going to present here. So in this presentation, I'm going to see how we could analyze utterance to utterance relations in multi-party meetings. Because meetings is a little different from normal text or a normal dialogue or monologue. So interactivity is a concept that I'm using to distinguish the two extremes of discourse in meetings. And for dialogues and monologues, I think we might have to use different concepts to model the discourse structure. Then I will give a very rough plan for the next couple of months, and finally I will introduce some related work. Yeah. So the big question that I'm concerned here is, what's the relationship between utterances in multi-party meetings? Or how do we analyze discourse structure right above utterances instead of those high level intentional structure of discourse. So the concern here is about the very local, low level utterance to utterance relations in multi-party meetings. This is the local discourse structure. So the building block of such kind of structure would be the utterance, and possibly one of its properties, the dialogue act, which we are currently working on. Or and for meetings, yeah, so I've mentioned before that meetings is a bit different from monologue and dialogues. So in meetings, I from my reading of the one of the M meetings, IS-108, the four meetings, I noticed that the interaction, degrees of interaction in the meetings varies from parts to parts. So for some part, the interaction is very strong, so it's obviously a dialogue. But for some part where the interaction is very weak, just like the chairman or project manager is coordinating the meeting, is pushing the meeting forward, then this kind of organizational structure or agenda following part, and also other parts like the back channels without any semantic content from other participants. So this kind of interaction might be better analyzed as monologue, which in which there is neo interaction, I suppose. So
I'm a little bit confused. Uh-huh. So when you say interactivity, do
yeah.
you mean well, how would you characterize a highly interactive meeting? What are the measurements you'd apply? So I think what you're doing is segmenting meetings into highly interactive parts and not so interactive parts, where you think some
yeah.
of them are like a bit like dialogue and some
yeah.
a bit like monologue.
Yeah.
So what measurements would you apply to
so
find out which is which?
Yeah, so this is going to be based on the utterance to utterance. So for this utterance, the next utterance, if it's from another speaker, then if it's not a back channel or something similar, then it's a dialogue, so it's speak changes. So yeah, speak change
you need
is
relatively short turns
and yeah.
speaker change.
Yeah, yeah, but short turns like or something very similar might be the second type of interactivity, the weak interactivity. That might not be analyzed as a monologue, but as a dialogue. Not as dialogue, but as a monologue. Yeah. So for that part, for that kind of back channels, we can just skip that and do not treat them as interruptions or something like. Then, yeah, we could just.
So am I right in thinking you think that you can segment meetings maybe into two types of areas?
Yeah.
Interactive and non-interactive. So
yeah.
What are the characteristics of the interactive areas?
Speak change would be.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, but you just said, I think that you would characterize short terms as being the non-interactive.
If it's just some kind of back channel or just a signal, the speaker is listening or is understanding what's going on.
You
yeah.
can discount back channels. I mean,
yeah.
Is it okay if we talk about this for a minute? Because I'm confused.
I was just wondering if you were going to define this more on the slides to come, or if this is as much as you're going to tell us. I'm just wondering
if this is all we've got, I think we should have interactive and non-interactive on the board and then figure out what properties go in each, just so we're clear what the two mean.
Sure.
Yeah,
So,
so
what did you have more on later
yeah,
slides
so for interactivity, this is the only slide. So yeah, activity is, I define interactivity to be the degrees of interaction in meetings. So which might, speak change would be a very good indicator, yeah.
But you need to be more precise what you mean by speaker change, so.
Yeah.
Do you mean all of the speakers are involved in it?
No.
Is it sufficient for two speakers? Right.
So actually, so this is a very rough idea of interactivity. If we go further, we might distinguish as the interactivity between two, three, or all the groups. So that might be some final definition for the interactivity. Yeah.
But we've also established that it's not just speaker change, because if you have okay.
Yeah. So that might be the second class. Yeah. Weak. That's the kind of weak interactivity.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you wouldn't necessarily consider that to change the terms. Those are just back channels. So one speaker will have the full channel throughout that. I mean, so I guess what you're saying is that the interactive sections would have shorter speaker turns when you're not.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
So.
Well, it might be the case that to be interactive, there have to be dialogue acts of some specific type.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, because I've looked.
Well,
like statement, reject, accept, you know, something
sufficient but not necessary, maybe. If you had a bunch of people all just giving information and opinion around the table, and they never actually ask questions of each other.
Okay, so for that case, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, so this might be a weak definition of interactivity. So if we could figure out if they are really interacting with each other, or just an incremental presentation of some information, so that's different. We might need a more strict or finer definition of interactivity. For the use of this term for the indicator of the degrees of interaction, I think for the current proposal, I think that it's just for distinguish between dialogues and monologues. Because for these two types of discourse, the two that we are going to analyze the discourse structure might be different.
Right, okay, I remember you saying this before.
Yeah.
So basically you want to do the segmentation because you're going to apply completely different analysis to the two sections.
Yeah. And also because I've read some of the MRDA corpus. So for some part of that kind of meetings, several utterances or dialogues are just tagged as statement. So that I don't think that would be very informative for high-level analysis. So that's why I'm distinguishing the two kinds of discourse. Mm-hmm.
So Wirtgen takes quite a strong position on this difference between these two kinds of group activities, because he says that they admit different kinds of analyses, right? With the non-interactive, more monologic sections of the meeting, you have to analyze them using something akin to rhetorical structure or something. And with the other sections, you use some other theory to look at them. And I actually think that that's a slightly extreme position with regard to the literature, but a lot of people might say it doesn't really matter who the different speakers are in an interactive section. You can still build maybe the same argument structure over the top of the basic acts and propositional content that's there. And what you get is a messier version of the argument structure, because not everybody has the same argument in their brain, you know, for this, but the same theory or the same analysis can be applied to both parts.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's important to keep that in mind. And if you do need to argue that these two kinds of group activities can only be analyzed if you use different analytical mechanisms, then you have to explain why that is.
Okay.
Right, so it puts an extra burden of proof on the work that you do.
Well, actually, I don't quite agree. I mean,
Mm-hmm.
for example, you can't use RST across speakers because the definitions of the relations depend on the intentions of the speaker, and the different speakers have different intentions. So you can't use the theory. It's just fundamentally wrong. It was meant as a theory for one person. Right, so
Yeah,
that doesn't
it's
mean
like,
there
yeah.
aren't others yet, so...
But to the degree that a group is building an argument together, I mean, I think what you're doing in a group discussion isn't necessarily one coherent argument for the person, but an argument that is the group view.
Yeah.
And so it's, maybe it's not RST, but it's more akin to, I don't know, is it Toulmin, but, you know, not that... But, you know, the kinds of things where people try to represent
Right, but those are very,
together.
Those are really different theories that are trying to get at different things, and they admit, of, you know, some of them admit of multiple parties, and some of them assume you're in one speaker's head, right?
Are the important aspects of it for this analysis really that substantively different, though?
Mm-hmm. The entire theory is based on intention, and the intention of one individual. So RST would be a bad theory to use.
But if somebody, if there's been an argument so far in a group meeting, and somebody makes a statement, they have an intention about how to modify that.
So modeling a single contribution by a single speaker, you can within that you can use RST if you want to, right? But across speakers, you can't.
Right. But
yeah.
You have no relations for things like reject or agree. The theory doesn't have them.
Okay, so the relation names aren't right, but...
So it's not the right theory, because the theory is the relations plus the notion of nuclearity, so we need a different theory. Now, I think Alex SDRS
might be
allows both kinds, so, you know, within a speaker turn, you can have things like explanation and cause and all that, but then across speaker turns, you can have things like correction, or I didn't see any examples of agree or disagree in SDRS, but
yeah.
There aren't. I mean, there are 30 relations, so we should look at what
yeah.
they are, but I
well,
don't...
Relation names are less important. I mean, people have argued for ages about exactly what relations are in any of these theories.
Well, her,
and
the relations
that's less important than what the theory is trying to achieve. It just seems to me that if you've got to have two separate apparatuses for the speaker internal argument structure and the group argument structure, that's more of an apparatus than you should actually need for from doing this kind of analysis. Because in both cases, you're building up an argument publicly in this group meeting and then, you know, adding something or changing the existing argument in some way by relating a contribution to what's already on the table. So.
Yes, but so, I mean, the relation names, it's not the names that are important, it's their semantics that are important, right? And the semantics of the relations are based on the semantics of the utterances that they're relating, as Alex explained yesterday.
Yeah.
And so it is important that these relations have a semantics that's tied to the semantics of the utterances, right?
Yeah, I just think, well, I mean, all of these things, when they encounter a new genre of actual data, then they end up modifying, building new kinds of relations with new kinds of semantics and adding them. That's the entire history.
Possibly, but few people have tried to, you know, do the kind of truth conditional semantics that, you know, Asher and Lascarides have done,
mm-hmm.
right? So the theory can handle the kinds of things that happen in meetings, as she explained. The actual computational mechanisms they have currently for building up the trees can't. Now, I don't remember which speaker it In the example she showed yesterday,
mm-hmm.
was it the case that the representation of the utterances and the relations included which speaker was?
No, just a turn exchange, yeah.
I mean, it had at the leaves, they had the, well, she didn't show it, but they would have the semantics of the utterances.
Mm-hmm.
And then she had relations.
Yeah, actually, she used a bunch of features to do the automatic parsing.
Right. I just didn't remember seeing in the representation
mm-hmm.
which speaker contributed what, because she did represent discourse structures Cause these were the verb mobile scheduling dialogues, so the utterances in the representation were uttered by two different parties. It wasn't the, you know, in the example she showed us, there was some that was just, you know, one party, it was a monologue, but then there was a snippet of dialogue as well.
Right. So there you've got somebody who's doing theoretical development that would claim that you don't need two separate analytical frameworks for these two types of activities that
for this specific set of relations that they've defined. There might be some higher level structure that you want to pull out of that. I mean, as you were saying, you're just going to,
very
local stuff, but from that, you would pull out something high.
We need to see how well we could work out of the utterance to utterance relationship.
I think working from the bottom up sounds great, but you can imagine someone saying, well, how did they decide to make it blue? And maybe there was a long blow, and you kind of want to abstract away from, he said this, she said that, to.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I
don't think, especially, you know, if you're not steeped in these theories, that it makes a huge difference to you whether we use RST or something like SDRS, but it might make much more, you know, I mean,
yeah, I just prefer it to be one thing rather than two completely separate things, and then the added explanation of why it's not possible to have the same thing applied to both.
Well, I think we should try to find a theory that allows multiple speakers and relations to span over more than one speaker, you know. Because it is true that, I mean, if you look at things like Damsel and other attempts to come up with annotation schemes for dialogue acts, there was this notion of forward-looking and backward-looking. Anyway, they're relational. I mean, in some way, you know, they're all relational. But there's a different set of tags in there from the kinds of relations you see within RST, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at Amanda Stent's thesis and the analysis that she did, sort of within a term, she used something like RST.
Mm-hmm.
And then across term, she used damsel. Right.
Yeah, which probably wouldn't give us the kind of information that we need about relations across terms, just because we really are critically interested in the argument that the group is building up, so that we can find the decisions that they made and any counter proposals to proposals that have been made and things. I mean, it really is more in the spirit of the RST-ish relations than in the damsel kinds of relationships. What we want out of the relationships between speakers there. They are jointly building an argument structure, and that is the critical thing that we're missing in order to be able to understand what's happening in these meetings. So we wouldn't want to do the same thing as what she did in this case, just because damsel doesn't give you the right sort of representation between speakers.
Well, it gives you things like accept and reject. And
oh, does it? Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I haven't seen it on this kind of data, so maybe.
In fact, RST doesn't give you anything like that.
No.
Right, okay. But what I mean is you want to make sure you get the argumentative relations however you do it,
okay.
Whichever relations you have to build.
Right.
You know, I'm not saying that there's a particular set of tags or relations that have been defined out there that are the right ones. I'm just saying we need the correct ones for the structure that we're trying to get out of this. Because
right.
We need certain
okay.
information out of this analysis.
So I think it's much more, I think it would make more sense to go about this problem figuring out what kinds of relationships we want and then finding, and you know, like setting down what the constraints are on.
Well,
we're
just been looking
scheme.
At the data, so that's
he's been looking at the data.
Example.
Okay, good. And then there are lots of different theories of argument. I mean, you can also think about the sort of joint problem solving kinds of approaches. So you know, Clark and Lovebaum, you know that kind of thing that were designed for dialogue. Right, I mean, and can be expanded to more than two persons. Actually, the long stuff is for groups.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah, for interactivity, this is a very weak definition. Yeah, if we need more, then we might use some more finer, definition for interactivity.
Well, what you'll need in the end is something operational.
Mm-hmm.
So something that you can use to actually segment meetings into the areas that you think are important for this analysis.
Yeah.
So
okay.
It's not quite clear to me what the different kinds of things are. So it would be, I think, handy if you could take a meeting at some point and say, you know, this is an interactive area and this is a monologic area, because we could come up with what kinds of measurements you need. We haven't done past work here on segmenting meetings in that way, but we have done work on characterizing different kinds of meetings in terms of how highly interactive they are, but it's a different definition, right? It's in terms of how much all of the people involved in the meeting take equal part in it, as opposed to what the highest status people in the meeting just driving it and the other people following whatever the highest status people want.
Mm-hmm.
So, but those kinds of measures we could use to do this kind of segmentation if it's important to the analysis.
Yeah, okay.
But we need clear definitions of what the different things are. How many different kinds of activities are there? Is it just interactive and non-interactive, or
mm-hmm.
are there more grades of shading than that? And what are the things that you expect in each? What's the back channel and behavior? What's the speaker chair? What kind of dialogue acts do you expect? I think that would help you pin down what the definitions are.
Yeah. Okay. So for dialogue, there would be some kind of interaction structure. So in previous discourse studies, especially in discourse analysis exchange, is used to describe this kind of local structure. And in conversation analysis, so adjacency pairs are used to describe this kind of structure. In these two strands of work, they just come up with a list, maybe not exhaustive. So I've been thinking about if we could come up with some kind of more principled scheme, taking some of the information in the interaction into account, like is the small part of the interaction is exchanging some information. Here information is a little vague. It could be some kind of knowledge what the speaker knows, or some kind of thought what the speaker is thinking. So these two kinds of information might be some kind of difference. So this is a little bit like the Bell's exchange of information for the knowledge, exchange of opinion, some kind of. So it's very related to thought or thinking. Yeah.
Do you think it matters whether something is knowledge or opinion in the way it contributes to the group process?
In some case it differs, because when we exchange knowledge, we might not challenge the speaker. But when the speaker is talking about what he feels, what he thinks, is proposing something, or then other speakers might challenge him or her.
Yeah.
So
I
that kind
I
of structure.
I've always taken the view that.
Yeah.
Well, people aren't very good at this kind of rationality, and the difference between information and opinion isn't that prominent in the way people do their reasoning. So,
but that might be some difference in interaction patterns. Might be, because for information, if somebody's seeking some information, then he asks some question and the one knows will gives the answer. But For the opinion or thought stuff, then the speaker might just present some idea and others will comment or challenge the idea. Yeah.
Well, you can't define them that way. You can't define the
mm-hmm.
definition and opinion that way because
okay.
that's basically defining is what happened about it. And I think what tends to happen is that if people challenge the facts,
mm-hmm.
you often discover that they weren't actually solid facts anyway. You know, that
yeah.
I think the boundary between these is
yeah, it's vague. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I guess the question is it important to, what's it important to? So do you need the difference between information and opinion to do this analysis?
So, because so far I'm still looking for a so-called principle scheme for the interaction, for the interactions. So.
So what have you been looking at?
Yeah, I was just gonna.
Yeah,
it
so.
It would be useful to know what.
Yeah.
You've got books that high on.
Which yeah.
ones are they?
Yeah. So yeah, for the discourse analysis, they are using exchange, but they have no. No classification, just
but
to come
they?
Up.
Who's they? That's the question.
Okay, you mean
who?
Sinclair and Cooper.
Right.
That is Birmingham School, and also Geneva School. They, I don't think they list some kind of exchange, but the exchange structure and yeah, exchange is first developed in systemic functional grammar,
mm-hmm.
along the Halliday and Martin. Work, yeah. So, actually, they have something in a textbook about the exchange. They call it negotiation. So, they have some flowcharts of the detailed analysis of exchange structure. Yeah.
Okay. So, I'm sort of getting that you think there's a lack in the theory to do with exchange structure, but I'm
yeah.
not quite clear yet what you think the lack is.
So, I don't think there is any kind of principle classification of exchanges. This is, yeah.
Well, are you thinking, it's been a while since I've read this literature,
mm-hmm.
but I mean, my understanding of exchanges is that the initiating move introduces a goal to the discourse,
mm-hmm.
and then the remaining moves will contribute to either the meeting of that discourse goal or the decision not to bother with that discourse goal, right? And so I'd be surprised if
okay.
there wasn't work describing
mm.
things in those terms. I mean, I know Sinclair and Coulthard is basically
yeah,
a
IRF kind of structure.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you wouldn't expect that to necessarily apply in wider context in a way. Like, you might expect to have to extend the theory to do that, but I think there are other people who have looked at exchange structure and described
okay.
it in these terms in a way that should really suit your needs.
Because from my previous experience with the analysis of information-seeking dialogues of telephones,
mm-hmm.
so it's about the tourism information. So
yeah.
from my analysis of that kind of dialogues, I could say that there are only four basic exchanges,
mm-hmm.
depending on the information, a direction of the information flow, and also the speaker role. Because in the information-seeking dialogues, the roles of the two participants are different. One is mainly the from the agency, a tourism agency, that is main information provider,
mm-hmm.
While the customer is the information seeker mainly. Yeah, so there, and also the direction of information flows for some kind of information like the price of a specific route, the spots they are going to visit, and also on the kinds of vehicle or
so
transportation, yeah.
A lot like George Horton's work on
uh-huh.
saying what are the different parameters for
yeah, yeah.
these exchanges.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
That characterize the set of exchanges, okay.
So, but there are also some variations which I call complex exchanges. So that's just a list, not like the basic exchanges. Yeah.
So is your complaint less about knowing what makes an exchange and more about knowing how you parameterize exchanges for this genre? So what's the range? Okay, so you're worried about what's the range of exchange types for this genre? And that's what
parametric. I'm looking for a parametric scheme. That's parameter or principle, something like because in the meetings the speakers might report something they've done in the past and talk about what they are currently doing and also planning some future actions. So this kind of information might also be helpful.
So have you tried, I know of one previous attempt to establish what exchanges are needed for some kinds of industry meetings, and our experience in that project was that you can't really identify exchange structures in these meetings because they don't really follow that pattern.
Mm-hmm.
The exchanges are clear in they're clearer in when you get fewer people, so there's fewer people trying to pull the discourse goals in different directions.
Yeah.
And they're clearer when your goals are quite limited. So when you've just got information exchange, and there's a clear task that the people are trying to do, and they're focused on that task, as is normal in dialogue elicitation, like map task or like your information-seeking dialogues, which wasn't dialogue elicitation, but it was very constrained in genre. So the answer to the question might be nobody knows what the catalog of exchanges is for your meetings, because or for these decision-making meetings, because you can't identify exchanges, right? So have you gone through the meetings and looked for initiations and responses without a prior catalog, just knowing that an initiation introduces a new discourse goal, and a response meets or negates that goal in some way.
Yeah.
So have you tried marking these exchanges?
Not marking, just from my reading of the IS-108 for meeting series. Yeah, just to read this part, yeah. Mm.
Well, I mean, I think that, I don't know, it'd probably be good to hear, more of your presentation, because I think there are lots of different candidates, and you certainly can't go through and mark up every meeting. I mean, mark up meetings with every scheme we think of. So I think we have to kind of get an overview of what the candidates are. And if there's like two or three that we think are good contenders, then we try to see what works better, right?
But a reading of this, could tell you that there is no case where you're going to be looking for initiation and responses that's going to work. Yeah. Because you could go through and see that actually the pattern of addressing different discourse goals is too dispersed to be able to do that from a market. But obviously when I
there are a lot of options.
There
are a lot more options. So let's see what else you've got.
Okay. So this is for the dialogue part for monologue. So this is
so that was it on dialogue. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so no further information is here.
Okay. It's very unclear to me why you think exchange of information is more principled. Did you have specific schemes in mind there? Or specific people's work that you were?
Because for the information and action, the action here is not that, but some kind of physical action that the participant is going to or has done in the past is going to do in the future.
Do you mean an action in terms of what the group is requiring them to do, or do you mean an action like picking something up? Action in the technical meeting sense, or just action in the physical sense?
Physical sense, yeah.
Right.
Physical sense, yeah. Yeah, so this kind of might be the some kind of semantics of the utterance or exchange. So this is just one thing, one parameter.
But can you give us an example of a scheme that's based on exchange of information?
I mean, here the scheme is for exchange scheme. So yeah, for exchange of information. So there might be the speaker and a hearer. So who speaks to whom, and so this is the so direction of the information flow, and also so speaker role might be first parameters for the information exchanges.
Mm-hmm.
So but for action, that might be some kind of propose or accept or reject kind of exchange structure. I mean.
Oh, so that's not physical action, right? If I pick this up,
uh-huh.
it's physical action. You can't reject that.
No. That's the. So we're going to do something, and so could you do something, or this kind of action-related utterance, I mean.
That's an action in the sort of technical sense of meaning.
Okay, technical sense.
So you're actioned to do something.
Yeah.
Which
is
part of the permanent record.
Okay.
So I mean, I think that there are a lot of things that we have to look at before. I mean.
Before come up with a scheme, you mean? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and.
Well, there are very few schemes for marking up exchanges on actual data, right? Because people haven't considered it very important. Well, I always thought they get tired after marking up the dialogue loop, so they never bother with an entire lot of dialogue structure. So we did it in the map test, but I don't actually know of other cases where people bothered marking anything higher level than that.
Standby does some.
Oh yes, sorry. But it's not been very popular.
No.
Public as it makes.
Okay, so, have you looked at Nate Blaylock's work?
I might not familiar with these.
So yeah. He has things like, you know, adopt. So basically, it's to. You know, collaborative problem solving,
mm-hmm.
you know, more than one person involved, and trying to characterize things as, you know, if I can't remember.
So is it the work described in the Coconut Project or something similar?
So the Coconut Project is a project that I did with Rich Thomas and
Barbara
DG.
Have
you looked at that?
Not very much detail.
No.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of detail in the paper, but you haven't looked at it in very much detail.
No.
So I think you should.
Okay.
Because it was all these things that are done for joint problem solving and joint action, I think, are very relevant to look at because these people are solving a problem together, right? So while these schemes may not have they have some of the essential components that you need to characterize joint problem solving. So while you may think that they're missing something, then we could certainly augment them, but I think that they have to be looked at. And so Nate Blaylock tried to, from Gross and Krauss and Gross and Seidner came all this stuff about shared plans and how you really can't understand, you know, dialogue unless you understand shared plans. But the actual theoretical or formalization of it was incredibly complex.
Yes.
And so
yes.
Lockbaum simplified it quite, and you know, Seidner and Rich and Collagen have simplified it quite a bit. But Nate Blaylock tried to, define, you know, what happens after somebody suggests something. Well, you can adopt it, you can, I can't remember, you know, okay, but
I know this guy,
right.
James Allen's student,
which we tried to apply to tutoring, but it actually doesn't work very well for tutoring, because tutoring is just a totally different
okay.
ballgame, but, it, you know, we spent a fair amount of time looking at it, and it did strike me that for joint problem solving, there were some good ideas, and there is, you know, a set of tags and what they mean, and you know, that sort of. And then you can also look at, you know, Clark on joint action. Now, he's not going to give you a set of tags because that's not the kind of guy he is.
No.
But the overarching idea, you know, I mean, I think accounts for a lot of the ways in which,
mm-hmm.
you know, these other people are thinking. But, I mean, I think that we basically have to merge some of this stuff that's been done, you know, on meetings with some of the stuff that's been done on collaborative problem solving, because there's elements of each that seem really important. And
well, the first step is find out in the what, how much of the material does the collaborative problem solving cover? So how much of a genre clash is there here?
Because it really seems to me that, you know, if you look at, and some of this stuff on exchange is like ancient, and you know, they didn't have the ability to market lots of data and count things, you know. So, I mean, all the conversational analysis stuff, I mean, those guys never count anything.
No.
You know? I mean, so they see a pattern and then they think it's kind of cute, and then they scour the world for third turn repairs. You know, they don't actually say how often do those happen. I mean, I know Manny Shagloff really well, and they're not counters. They're purposely not counters. They define themselves as
mm-hmm.
not counters.
But there are people in the field that are moving that direction, like Martin. And also, what's important here is the theoretical clarity about what an initiation and a response is. So what is it that ties different acts together at
mm-hmm.
a higher level?
Yeah, I mean, it does seem like, you know, there's something that we want from that, and then there's something that we want from collaborative problem solving.
Mm-hmm.
And if you take the exchange stuff, it's not going to quite do everything you want. And if you look at the collaborative problem solving stuff, maybe it won't do everything that you want. And so.
But I think more important than looking at whether parts of the meeting are highly interactive or not so interactive is looking at what sort of tasks the people are trying to do at the moment. So, you know, are they doing, as in the kickoff meeting, just exchanging information to get started with the project, or are they actually addressing some specific design criteria? One should try to decide which shape the thing is, because that's going to affect the kinds of relations that you get between the utterances. And so that is much more like the literature from the graph about the different kinds of activities we get into.
Yeah.
So I think that's another thing that has to be pulled into this, because you do require different kinds of relations, or you expect different kinds of relations from some overarching set in those different kinds of activities.
Yeah. So mid-actions, I guess, might be some high-level problem solving or decision making concepts, not like the exchange, which I would like to be very low-level utterance-to-utterance relations.
So what's the high-level version
of games? I mean, mid-actions might be some.
Right. Okay.
Might be
meeting actions is just going to be a segmentation. It's not going to present any microstructure.
Okay. So
say from here to here they're doing something. That's
okay.
All that,
like,
that scheme is going to do.
Okay.
Somebody's writing on the whiteboard, or I mean, the meeting actions they presented at the review seemed really low level to me. Like somebody stood up.
That's
okay.
That's
physical, some
actions.
Kind of physical actions. Yeah.
And the meeting actions are meant to become more semantic and more theoretical than the kind of EDF had traditionally used.
Okay.
So we need to still preserve some sense of the activity, but rather than saying that if somebody's at the whiteboard, it'll be, you know, somebody's explaining something that the others are.
Okay.
I mean, I realize it's important to recognize that, you know, Wei-Ching went to the whiteboard. I realize it's important. I was kind of surprised that those were meeting actions. So
yeah, different scheme, yeah. So, the mid actions that you're talking about, I think, might be built up from the exchange. Yeah, at least exchange might be one kind of important information.
Mm-hmm.
For
but you might need the meeting action segmentation in order to know what area you're circumventing for. So it's just exchange structure in this area that you're looking at, and then that's a solid boundary between the next bit or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But time's getting on.
Yeah,
So, you know, what practical things can we do to help this work move forward? So show what else
next.
You're
Yeah,
thinking
so
about.
yeah, from Moloch, I have not looked into the details about the this kind of relations for the Moloch part. Just a list of these relations. And so next I need to review the literature and come up with schemes for the real data annotation.
Mm-hmm.
And of that, because this is not in the hub corps, so
mm-hmm.
we are not going to get all the millions annotated with that kind of information.
Mm-hmm.
So so we might first try a few millions and have a reliability study. If it's reliable enough, then we must just annotate a small part of the millions and using some learning techniques to bootstrap the automatic analyzer.
Well, marking up exchange structure, if it's there, and
mm-hmm.
if you've got a working scheme for it, is relatively cheap. It's a lot cheaper than doing that.
Yeah, if it's based on the Dalax, yeah.
Right. Well, one presumes it is, otherwise it's going to be radically expensive to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's something that we can look at, but you need to. What we need, it's more important than knowing, you know, that we need an exchange structure mocked up on X amount of data at this point, is knowing where you're headed with this, I think. So what's the good that the project gets out of this in the end? So, you know, what's the headline results of the work on the project, I think is what we're trying to get a sense of here.
Yes.
So you get your exchange structure marked up, and say we just put in the money, get exchange structure marked up on that entire hub, or, you know, figure out how to bootstrap it so we get this. How do you solve that as a project goal? You know, because people are going to say exchange structure. So what? How do
fits
you
the meeting browser?
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So. This might not be the final goal that could be fit into the browser, but it might be some kind of information which might benefit meeting actions or some more high-level decision-making or problem-solving, because this is the building blocks, I guess, yeah. So.
Because I think that just to make this more efficient,
mm-hmm.
you should be thinking about the high-level goal,
yeah.
to focus the work that you're doing, rather than thinking, well, you know, there's these theories, you know, how can we apply these theories to it? And then seeing what comes out of that that might be useful for the meeting browser. Actually
okay.
trying to say, yeah, we have a goal of being able to do this for the meeting browser. What kinds of dialogue structure would we need to be able to do that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know, maybe you'd want to disagree with that, but this more goal directive might actually make it easier to bring this into the publication in the long run, right?
Well, I think we should approach it both ways. I mean, you know, the meeting browser people have a lot of constraints, and so what they end up with saying is most critical for them right now might not be the most interesting thing in the longer term.
Right.
And
it's
so
not necessarily what they say, but it's something, at least identify something that we hope to get out of it, you know.
Right. I mean, people have said over and over again that they would like to understand how a decision has evolved,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think that, well, I don't know if all of this low-level stuff would allow you to track that kind of thing, but it might at least be the building blocks of allowing you to track that kind
yeah,
of thing.
Yeah, yeah. So after this, we might do some from here, we might be
yeah,
some problem-solving, decision-making process to track that kind of information. Yeah.
So I mean, I think it's clear that something at this level needs to be there. I mean, and to ask questions like who disagreed or were there any counter proposals or whatever, even those kind of questions, you need some kind of markup like this.
It just helps you know which theory you should be concentrating on. So, you know, that immediately discounts exchange structures that are mostly for information seeking alone, because the notion of exchange is too restricted there and in favor of these more argumentative things. So, I don't know, I just think you should keep in mind what the final goal is,
yeah,
so that you can plug this into something at the end and show some benefit of having that.
Well, that brings up something interesting, because I think probably what we should do is try to get, you know, some of these tasks sort of put on, you know, sort of as part of the official agenda. So being able to answer questions like, were there any counter proposals to the, you know, banana shape or whatever, or to some specific, you know, recommendation and things like that. I mean, you know, those, you know, strike me as clear things that, you know, people who go to decision-making meetings want to know if they've missed one or arriving
yeah.
late or anything like that. So it seems like we should probably get some of these things on the official agenda and say, look, you know, wouldn't it be nice if you could have answers to these questions?
Yeah, I mean, operationally, it's not going to make much difference whether it's hub or not, right? Because we've got the bank people. Well, we have to get the hub stuff through, but, you know, he's not ready with an annotation scheme that can be used at the moment anyway, so.
No,
I mean,
so
it's not that expensive, and it's a thing that we can afford our budget.
And I think we wouldn't want to necessarily do this on ICSI data. I think the ICSI data is too,
yes.
too
yeah.
complex,
yeah.
and
yeah.
there aren't
yeah.
enough real
yeah.
decisions made, you know,
mm-hmm.
that you could clearly identify. I mean, there are some, but,
mm-hmm.
and not that I've read more
yeah.
than about two meetings, but
yeah.
I think, it, you know, well, so one thing that's going to be interesting is the, I think to me, is the, what can you do? Because presumably the DFKI folk or somebody is going to mark up a lot of the data with sort of tags about ontology, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So we know, you know, somebody will have gone in by hand and sort of marked up something will, like shallow semantic-y kinds of things, right? Or
yeah,
maybe
that's not hub either, but yeah.
Deeper semantic-y
yeah.
things that, but you know, not really in a formal language, but mostly just, you know, tags, right? And then the question is, well, how does, you know, just the way people typically do this is, you know, let's take these semantic features into it, or these features into account and see how well we do with the learning, and then let's throw these features out and see how well we do. Because we know we're going to have them because one or two sites is really are really interested in this ontology stuff, right? I mean, TNO is and DFKI is, right? So there will be some kind of domain semantics, and there will also be presumably some kind of task hierarchy modeling going on in, because the whole browser working group final sort of presentation on that second day was about, you know, knowing the task,
mm-hmm.
right? And very, you know, details about which task is this, you know, which subtask is this little chunk of the meeting addressing and furthering in various ways, right? Which seems like it would be really hard in an open domain.
Well, I don't remember that about who.
You remember when Steve Whitaker came in at the end and said, you know, they'd spent the morning talking and they came up with this idea.
But that was about what task the person doing the browsing was going to do. They didn't say anything about what sort of information they'd want from the meeting itself. It was about,
they just mentioned that there are decision issues, action items. I think we were talking about user requirement for the meeting, then subtext they want to know.
No, they said people are talking about tasks, you know? I mean, they really, they made it clear that they were,
That
that
was
they were
the,
gonna
that was
have
the browser task, because they've identified these 7 different tasks people might wanna do with browsers. You know, like join a meeting late and catch up on what's happened in the meeting so far, be at home waiting for the washing repair guy.
No, those are the scenarios. Those are the user scenarios. The task, when he came back and said that at the end, I mean, it actually kind of scared me because it was all based around tasks.
Okay, well.
And the domain tasks, okay, they now have to decide how many buttons to put on this thing. I mean, it was all about the domain tasks.
Okay.
And it is really, and given that, it's really scary to think about what you could possibly do in an open domain where you don't know what the tasks are. And I don't think you're going to be able to figure them out very reliably.
But I thought you wanted to avoid doing stuff that was stuck in this particular domain if possible. But, you know,
I do, but the whole project is, you know, focused on AMI Hub data as their first priority.
Well, yeah. But that doesn't mean you have to be using the techniques that you can be using open data.
No. But I mean, if they had this sort of epiphany at the end of this meeting where they decided, well, why are people browsing this? Well, it's all to see how, you know, how the participants were furthering their tasks.
Hmm. And you don't think that can be done in open domain at all? Because we don't want to get into working with ontologies. I mean, one of the strengths of this grouping was that, you know, they all work with the closed domain ontologies and work with the open domain side of things. So. I don't know.
Well, right, and then, yes, and then there was this confusion about the last Spiderphone conference that the messages telling people to call came out after the meeting happened. At least to some of us.
Oh, right, yeah, so we don't know what happened with that one, yeah.
So, I mean, we'll get that back on track, but I think that we don't, you know, there will be some meeting browser demo that, you know, I think it's an interesting question of, okay, well, if you have knowledge, here's what you can do. If you don't have that knowledge,
mm-hmm.
you have to do different things, and, you know, you can't necessarily.
Yeah. So you're advising Weiqing that he should be using like any ontologies and propositional content that DFKI and TNO Bank in the CVS repository, or
when he does these learning
mm-hmm.
experiments, he should do them two ways because he will have
with
this opportunity
mm-hmm.
with or without, and
yeah,
then we can see like
fun.
Well, without you know these tags. So you know Alex was showing yesterday. Well, without knowing the head word of the utterance of the leaf, you know, you get these kinds of results. And when you add that in, you get these other kinds
yeah,
of results.
Yeah.
And, you
different
know,
feature combinations,
yeah.
yeah.
So I think if we have those features, it's, you know, it's a rare opportunity that you can you know,
mm-hmm.
you can try
yeah.
one head-to-head against the other. And then, of course, to make sure that you really
I don't know when they'll bank these, by the way, because it's not hub, so it's one of these things where everybody's supposed to bank as many things as possible.
Right.
So, you know.
Well, we won't use until they're ready, obviously, so we might do the sort of open domain, you know, although it will be a closed domain. I mean, we can't
yeah.
use any domain
right.
information necessarily. I mean, there probably are a bunch of issues. Like, if you've got 100 hours of meetings and they all talk about a lot of the same things,
yeah,
then
it's
not really open domain, and somehow that sneaks into all the statistics anyway, because you don't have such a wide vocabulary.
Well, eventually, the hub is supposed to be 40% non-scenario.
Right.
But that data is definitely going to be coming in last. So.
Sure, so we might find that when we move from what we thought was open domain, but on the hub, you know, our results go down when we truly are
yeah.
getting
it's
meeting, yeah. So, I mean, that'll be interesting.
We've got 5 ISCO meetings, actually, which are still an elicitation test, but they're not our domain. So that should help some.
Okay, well, that's good.
And they've been declared help, so. so that'll accrue all of the normal unplanned issues. Of course, yeah, you'll never get the TNR and DPI stuff out, because they're only doing stuff for 1 million.
So, okay, so we wanna decide what Eugene should do next, and maybe think about meeting, and I don't know.
Yeah, just figure out how we're gonna help them
yeah.
to try to make this more efficient.
So before we do that, can I just ask you a question about chunking?
Yeah.
In the beginning,
yes.
You said something about you were doing this chunking, and you're doing it on the ICSI data, but this was, did you say it wasn't picked up in AMI, or I was confused.
I mean, I was supposed to chunk part of the AMI meetings in order to see if the chunker channel switchboard works well enough
mm-hmm.
or not. If not, then we have to use some kind of some supervised learning or some
mm-hmm.
bootstrapping to do the chunking.
And you haven't done it yet?
No, because I was a bit worried about this kind of disk structure. Yeah.
That's fine. So
yeah.
That's still on the agenda to do.
Yeah, but we should make sure we finish that up, because otherwise that looks just wasted, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
We're going to use chunks for something useful.
Okay.
Yeah,
well. So, I mean,
identities, if nothing else.
Right. Or building blocks. I mean, we have to think about how chunking interacts with the automatic segmentation, you know, because Barbara was showing the low level.
Segmentation.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I mean, it seems to me that chunking should have some kind of. So if your dialogue at segmenter says there's a segment here, but your chunker said no, this is a coherent chunk.
Yeah.
Then
that's a problem. Yeah.
You know, I mean, maybe they could work together to do a better job than.
Certainly, if you've got chunks, it ought to help you know where your dialogue at boundaries better not be.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be even more mechanical than that, based on the examples we're seeing from DFKI, because
mm-hmm.
they're hand marking stuff and they. Dialogue at funders is supposed to be intentional, but they seem to always be marking them that after verbs, you know, with clause.
Right.
It looks quite mechanical, so we're querying them about this,
okay.
But that's not where they're supposed to be doing it.
Right, okay. Good. So it sounds like,
Hold on, but when do we need chunking by? And, it, you know, so. I don't like the idea that, you know, you start something and then 18 months later you pick up to do the last 10% of the work to finish it off or whatever. So I like things kind of tidy. Right. So
how much
work is there left and when do we actually need it by would be useful for us.
Well, you wanted to do the chunking on the AMI data, right?
Yeah.
Because
the AMI data is there. There's HEFSA data is transcribed, I think, in the final form. We can check the wikis, but, you know, the data is rolling in, so.
So we got stuck at some point on evaluation of chunking, right? The problem was you didn't have ICSI data that was hand-labeled for chunks.
No.
And we decided labeling the ICSI data for chunks would be probably difficult and maybe not very useful.
And
so
Barbara still says somebody's done this for chunks.
Okay.
I'll
so
have to look up.
Okay.
Know, so
if there was hand labeled data that you could evaluate against, so train on some and evaluate on some, wouldn't that because you've trained on switchboard, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where there are chunks. So if you had some ICSI data that you could maybe use, I don't know, there's a training set, and then there's the development set, and then there's the test set. Maybe you use some chunk ICSI stuff as development or something.
Mm-hmm.
Do some last tweaks and then evaluate.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I mean, I can see why Eugene didn't want to spend his time chunking ICSI. Which means we have to get some portion of the data hand-chunked.
Mm-hmm. But that should be that hard to do, right? How much data do you need?
How much?
I don't remember. What was that? Is
that
it
much? And switchboard, switchboard is all chunked.
Yeah.
Yeah, the data, how much data you need was not a problem with the switchboard because we had lots, so you didn't have to think about how much. So we need to know how much data you need hand chunked.
Well.
And then how do you hand chunk stuff, right? So you were working on instructions for doing hand chunking.
No, you had pen tree bank parses and you
For
made chunks
switchboard,
from that.
Yeah, possible,
There are two possible options for doing this on the AMI data. You could either essentially go the same route as they did with the switchboard, you know, do the pen tree bank and then create the chunks off that. Or you could chunk directly. And it wasn't clear to us which one of those two methods was the right way to do this.
Direct chunking, because we are not going to build any tree out of the AMI data.
Right, well,
is
so
anybody
you have
gonna
to produce
parse
as part of this
is
exercise.
anybody gonna try to parse the AMI data?
We would have thought so, but
I said DFKI because they're working on some HPSG parsing.
Yeah,
yeah, might be. Might be, yeah.
But
if
that's not very similar, well, I don't know very much about grammar. Is that similar enough that the same method could apply that we derive chunks off the HPSG?
If I guess that if they are different, then we might just write another script to do the translation.
I think you might lose a lot in, you know, the step. So basically, your chunker is trained on something that was derived off pen tree bank, and it might be different enough that actually causes it not to match. You know, if you're suddenly evaluating against chunks that were done using HPSG.
Okay.
I don't know about grammar,
yeah,
but
I need
you know,
to look at some of the details to see.
Well, they're using the ERG, right? Probably has maybe finer, which I believe has finer grain distinctions and different labels.
And the mapping can be pretty difficult for this, right? Or is it easy to map between finer grain distinctions?
It's probably easy to dumb down the HPSG parse too. The pen tree bank parses are pretty minimal because they didn't want to commit to a specific grammatical theory. So
okay.
I mean it. Probably is worth looking at, because they're doing this with Dan Flickinger, right? Which is the same parser as the Redwoods tree bank was made with, that Alex talked about yesterday. So you can look at Redwoods parses and see how different they are from tree bank parses. And you might want to talk to Alex to find out if somebody's already done this, turn Redwood stuff into tree bank stuff so that they can compare, you know, against results that are reported on tree bank.
The names would suggest that this was the idea, right?
Well, that was the idea, I believe, but it was supposed to be another tree bank.
Right, so that sort of assumes that we think it's better to do this by deriving chunks from some parse format than just hand chunking the stuff.
Well, a good thing about that is that then you know that when you go through and parse, you'll be getting the same chunks as when you do this process automatically. Because the problem with when you go through and hand do it is then suddenly you introduce your automatic method and your accuracy can go way down. And sometimes it doesn't. You know, sort of for part of speech tagging, you know, whether you do it by hand or machine, it's pretty much the same accuracy, right? But
so let's try it this way, and then that puts off the question of when do we have to do this to when we get HPSG stuff, right? So can you ask DFKI whether they can give us a couple AMI meetings run through their HPSG process? I don't even know what time scale they had in mind. I mean, is this something they were doing it at the moment, but I don't know whether this was very preliminary or do you remember?
They talked about it at the meeting that we went to in
2020. Yeah.
I was thinking Enschede. I can't have remembered the right name of this place. Yes, 20. Which you were there, Jean.
Yeah. You're expecting me to remember stuff, aren't you?
No, I know you missed a meeting, and
oh yeah,
and so there
oh,
may
I
have been.
I don't even know which one I missed.
You missed the one in TNO.
TNO, okay.
TNO, yeah.
See, I wasn't there, so I don't know what it is.
Okay. Yeah, because, they did some work in Wilma Bio project with the HPSG person.
Yeah.
At least.
On which project? Sorry, I didn't get
Wilma Bio.
Vermobile, right.
Yeah,
yes,
Vermobile, okay.
Yes, they did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So ask them, right?
Well,
mm-hmm.
that's what Alex talked about yesterday, right?
Mm-hmm.
The parse, I mean, that wasn't something she did, but that's the data she's using, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we have all that stuff here, you know, the parsed verbmobile material. So you can look at that and see what the parse trees look like. You don't need to wait for DFKI. And if it turns out that you think, oh, there's no way I can map these into Penn Tree Bank style bracketing, then we have to think of something else.
Okay,
right?
Okay.
But I think they had that in mind, so it's worth also talking to her about that. Okay, good.
So it's talk to Alex, see if it looks like it maps by looking at the verbmobile. If it does, ask DFKI either for data or time scale, and you're going to need to know how much data you need in order to do that. So,
yeah.
Do you have a technique for estimating how much data you need?
Not sure.
I don't know how you do that, so who knows how you do that?
Everybody always says there's no data, like more data.
Okay, so just ask DFKI how much data and what, right?
Okay.
You know, I mean, the typical thing is to do mean one out cross validation, you know.
Yeah, I know.
89 dialogues, okay, so I train on 88.
Okay.
Or I train on 1,999. Okay, but we should speak to Steve. We might
have
time
in mind when we need a chunker that works on this stuff. So.
Well, the question is, what is chunking going to help? I mean, I think chunking could help automatic dialogue act segmentation. I think chunking could help, as you mentioned, named entity recognition.
Like, if we did a chunked version of the AMI data and stuck it in the CDS under the automatic contributions, then people would end up using it, because they do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, at what stage should we put that in?
Well, we'd want to make sure we're pretty happy that it's reliable.
Yeah, so post-evaluations, we can put in some idea of what the evaluation is like.
Yeah. I mean, otherwise, you get these very bizarre results because the data is not real. Very good. So, but nobody has expressed like massive interest in chunking. So I think, you know, nobody's waiting for
it. Nobody's relying on it this summer.
But I think we should talk to Barbara about how to do some joint experiments, or if she's going to be sending other people, maybe Liz or whoever comes over next time. And it would actually be great if it was Liz, because I think she is the one who did the dialogue app segmentation.
So when do you think that would be? When is she coming?
She just said that hopefully by the next meeting she would be bringing someone else, or someone else would be coming instead of her.
But that's a pretty tight time scale then, right? Because it'd be for the fall we'd want to know the evaluation. Is that the time scale you're thinking of?
Not to have it done, but just to talk about how it could interact with automatic dialogue act segmentation. And I guess we should talk to Yoshi about it. In relationship to named entities. Who's doing named entities besides Yoshi?
Vessel, I think.
Okay, so we could talk to Vessel about that as well.
Mm-hmm. I think you should still ask Barbara again, you know, can you have another think about who might have the chunking stuff? Because she has said several times there must be somebody and she can help with that. And I think she's just forgotten. So.
And then
we can evaluate on the EFC, you know, pretty easily.
So one thing that would be very helpful for me, because I haven't read, I think we're in a situation where Jean, you know, has read a lot of literature, and I've read a lot of literature, and there is some overlap, but there's also quite a big space where we don't know the literature from the other side. And since you're going to be reading it, I mean, it would probably be useful if you made some kind of, you know, report that described, you know, okay, this is what these people, you know, this is, you know, a synthesis, okay, here's the basic idea behind exchange structure, and, you know, here's a couple of, you know, here's the two most relevant works that I've read or something like that, you know,
yeah,
to just
even if it's just a, you know, on a wiki the references and then why they're relevant, right? I mean, you don't want to make this
or
really
even
formal,
just like
idea.
A paragraph of,
yeah,
you know, the basic
page.
Idea, just
yeah.
because, you know, obviously I'm not going to go read off and read all this kind of stuff because I don't have time.
Mm-hmm.
You probably
yeah.
don't have time to read all this collaborative help.
But that would help us be a lot more specific than just you know, listing bullet points on slides, because then we'd know sort of which literature we're thinking of.
Okay.
We
yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and anyway, every time you write a paper, you've got to go back
I
and do this related
anyway,
work thing
yeah.
anyway. So it just makes it a lot easier to get that common
okay.
ground. I think you know.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
think it's a real advantage that we've read different things and come at it from a different side, because I think this the previous approaches haven't really,
mm-hmm.
you know,
they haven't addressed
taken,
the problem. Yeah.
You know. The good features from you know both sides and try to put them together.
Yeah.
Mm.
I'm gonna have to go for a second
yeah,
because
I've
got this hearing to go to. But
I can send
so
you
practical actions. You know, what are the things we're gonna want to do?
Well, I think we both want to send. Well, I don't know. Maybe you've already done this, but you know, I will send you, or we can you know chat offline for a minute about a list of things that I think you really need to take a look at.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Jean, probably maybe you should do the same.
Okay. Sometime later, yeah? Okay.
And if Sabrina has any ideas, we'd be happy to hear from Sabrina as well.
Right now, I'm trying to do the meeting action documentation.
Mm-hmm.
Because after talking to Jean, just we have different ideas whether meeting action will be about the same size as topic segments.
Okay.
So
yeah.
It would be good to right now I'm doing this, looking at the data and trying to see
mm-hmm.
if I can do the meeting action segmentation first on the scheme and then do topic segmentation again
mm-hmm.
to see if the boundary actually coincides with the other.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
If that do, then maybe we can talk again.
Yeah.
Whether
so you can do this exercise and then come and talk to me sometime
mm-hmm.
next week. I'm not in Monday, but the other days I'll be around.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I have just started, and so far, I think it's still about the same level of segmentation we're
yeah.
talking here. But
yeah.
maybe the boundary will not be exactly the same.
Yeah,
but
this is interesting, but I don't think we can afford to look at this right now.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't you bring
right.
it by
sure.
Next week?
Yeah.
And what I really want to concentrate just now
mm-hmm.
is finding out how we're going to help Wojcik
mm-hmm.
with making progress on this.
Mm-hmm.
So we've already got, you know, he's going to construct a list of references he thinks is important, and Johanna and I and you as well are going to contribute to that.
Mm-hmm.
And we can put that on wiki, or we can do it some other way. I mean,
okay.
you know I'm looking at, so if you share it, it should go on a wiki, because I can't find anything in my email, but, you know,
yeah,
one has to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
And then how do we, you're actually, so what you're doing is taking all of the most important references for finding argument structure that might eventually be of some use to a meeting browser, and trying to look at actual data and apply it and see like which one helps you figure out what you're actually going to do with this particular data, right? So it seems to me that we should take like a front runner scheme and the data, and we should look at not front runner scheme but front runner theory, and see if you can speak to the data, you know, using that kind of theory at some point. That might be an interesting exercise, right?
Well, I think we need to, like you mentioned earlier, factor in what this might be used for in the end. And so even if it won't be used, maybe if it would need some higher level analysis before it could be directly used for that purpose, we should still keep that in mind. And so I think going through the presentations that were given at the Work Package 6 meeting where
mm-hmm.
And I think it wasn't, was it Anita or was it her name? The other woman from Twente, you know, they talked about, they had done a lot of questionnaires and they got some user requirements out of that. And then Steve presented the results of following people around and looking at how they use their notes from meetings. And so that would give us some ideas about, you know, what people want, you know, out of meeting records. But then we should also add things that we think are interesting.
Well, that's a good starting point.
But just to have, to keep some of these goals in mind, because one scheme might let you answer this set of questions, but wouldn't help you at all with another set of questions.
Exactly, yeah. So you want to go through basically the user requirements and, you know, maybe think about some of the requirements that you want to make a case for. You know, these are the kinds of things that we want. And look, you're going to need this kind of dialogue or argument structure for it.
So should we expect that all the slides from, like, the Work Package 6 meeting or the Joint Work Package 5 will be up on one of the Work Package websites? And if not, how do we make that happen?
I'll think about that.
Okay. Some of this was presented in at least the one spider phone or the second spider phone telecon I went to for Work Package 6. So if they're not on the web, we can try to look at that, you know, at the materials that were presented in that telecon without necessarily listening to the whole telecon. Yeah?
So we're just trying to get records. I mean, I'm sure they're not on the web.
And Steve and his, I've forgotten the name, was it Simon?
Yeah.
They I think they may have written this up in a report, but I would hope that's on the Work Package 6 website as well.
Okay, so we're going to go through the requirements like that, and did you think this was reasonable to, after that, to try and actually, you know, take some theory that seems fairly reasonable and think about...
I do, once he's read a couple more...
Yeah.
I mean, he's just completely missed out the collaborative problem-solving world, which I really think we need to take into account. I mean, you may take it into account and say, no, you're wrong, and here's why, but I'm going to need some convincing.
So then try from the scheme.
Or two, and see, this one gives you this, and this one, and can, you know, are they fundamentally incompatible, or can we?
But try it in form.
Yeah.
When do we get together again? Because I really do have to go.
Okay.
I promised these guys I'd be there.
I think this is going to take about 3 weeks because he's got plenty of reading to do.
Uh-huh.
Oh. So maybe we get together again.
Reading lists before that, though, so.
Yeah, I mean, I'll send him the references immediately.
So we'll get together in about 3 weeks.
Okay.
Is that enough time for you, do you think?
Sorry, you mean?
Is that enough time for you to read and think about?
I will try my best. Yeah.
If it's too tight, you know, I can
say
four.
Because Julie and the boy is here, so it's a little tiring because my parents have left.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I might take
two weeks off
in May, sometimes,
okay.
Yeah.
So
off,
we should
yeah.
get together probably in about 4 weeks. Yes.
Okay, thanks.
So when are you going to bring this beautiful baby in to see everybody?
I hope so very soon. Yeah.
Good, that's great.
Yeah.
Right. I'm gonna head off.
Yeah, well,
okay.
Good luck.
Thanks.
Solving your problems.
Are more important than dialogue structure, I'm afraid.
Have to tick and tick.
Yeah.
Does something
weird
when you do this.
I want to photocopy this.
Ask Melissa.
Yeah, you don't mind asking her if I can get a photocopy of you.
No.
Okay. So let's say
we can just carry
it
off and take it off?
I don't know. So I'm gonna leave it here for now. Oh.
I think she said it.
She said you can take them away because they've all been recorded.
Yeah.
And see.
I thought you photocopied them before.
Okay, we'll check with her.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
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 Oh, thanks a lot, Jean.
Thanks.
I always like dialogue structure.
Okay, there we are.
I've done a lot of dialogue structure stuff in a long time, but never mind.
So where can I find
her? There is a
phone,
and it is not plugged in.
Okay.
We were trying to call up here to tell you that I was going to be a few minutes late because I was talking with Ivana trying to organize the Viva for Monday. And so I said, call the instrument in the meeting room, and do they have a phone number? And David said, yes. And then he said, oh, I don't think there's a phone number.
I have just run down my battery for 2 hours accidentally.
By not?
Yeah. Do you have a backup battery?
Better have electricity.
Okay.
It's
the bar.
Can I take it now, Melissa?
Yeah, you can take it now. You don't check to see how good the pens are at recording stuff?
Well, I mean,
an okay box, right?
I think so. Otherwise we end up with kind of by the council, right?
Yeah, it's a little too warm here, yeah.
Too warm, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, we already told them. We've already input that into the, okay.
Mm-hmm.